This is a regular meeting of the House. This is a regular meeting of the House State Affairs. This is Monday, February 4th. It is 9 o'clock in the morning. We have Representative Bloomberg, Representative Mike Miller, Representative Baker, Representative Moyer, Representative Shilkett, and Representative Bruckman. And myself, and Representative Cabina. Today we're going to be taking up House Bill 4 relating to Legislative Ethics Act. This morning the committee will be briefed on House Bill 4, the Legislative Ethics Act, sponsored by Representative Finkelstein. House Bill 4 proposes to delete the current ethics law governing legislators and legislative employees and replace it with the Legislative Ethics Act of 1991. Present this morning is the bill sponsor, Representative Dave Finkelstein and John DeGuine. Legislative Legal Counsel. They are here to give us an overview of HB 4 and answer questions. Since the committee will not be taking action on House Bill 4 this morning, today's meeting and teleconference will be listen only for the members of the public. Public testimony will be taken at the bill's first formal hearing to be held probably next week. People wishing to testify in House Bill 4 are encouraged to contact State Affairs Committee staff at 465-4859 for the hearing date and time. This time I'd like Representative Finkelstein and Mr. Gagwin. Am I saying that right?
Gagwin.
Close
Gagwin.
Enough.
Gagwin. To join the committee at the table for an overview. Can we get another chair somewhere? Also, members of the committee, we are on teleconference, so if you do speak, please turn on your mic. I believe there is a change in our packets. The amendments that we have in your packet are not going to be taken up at this time or maybe completely changed. So Representative Finkelstein, would you make sure, when you start off, that you let us know what is good in our packets and what is not?
Is it the right one?
Excuse me. The paper clip packet that was set on top just now, that's the correct thing. Everything else you can ignore on the left side of your file folder inside.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Bill we have before you today is result of effort I made over the interim, trying to take some of the work the House and Senate did last year on the ethics bill and add to it some and use the bill as at least a starting point for this year. The lesson I learned from last session, though, was that no matter what you come up with to start off the game on an ethics bill, it will be a long process, many, many amendments before it reaches the end. So on any of the matters we might discuss today, all I've offered is my best thoughts on it, and whatever the committee chooses to do on it is fine with me. If it's okay with the committee, what I'll do is just go briefly through the bill. I won't go section by section, but instead article by article, talking about the overall concepts of the bill. And as I'm going through it, if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask, or you could ask when we get to the end. There's only one amendment that I'm offering myself, or I'm hoping the committee will consider. I plan, though, between now and the next hearing on this bill in this committee to work with members of the committee or other members of the legislature to add other amendments the committee might want to consider. I've had probably four or five amendments already that people suggested and that I started work on. The first section is purpose. That used to be a very long section. We made it a very short section. It was the goals and objectives section before, and it included principles. Now it no longer does. It conforms with generally the way we draft other kinds of bills. The standards of conduct gets into what is the traditional ethics legislation, rather than campaign finance reform or some of the others. A lot of the standards in here are exactly as they are in current law. Other ones have been strengthened. There's nothing magic about any of these approaches. It's, a lot of them have come out of recognition of potential problem areas. Others are just approaches that have come out of other ethics legislation in other parts of the country, model ethics kind of legislation. Then the Article 3 is campaign financing restrictions. These are a lot simpler than the rest of the bill. You can describe pretty easily the few things it says. Number one, you can't use campaign funds as personal income. Number two, you can't transfer forward unlimited funds from one campaign to another. It's limited to $5,000 for House and $7,500 for the Senate. And number three, the timing of fundraising is limited. No fundraising occurs during a session and is limited to June 1st through December 31st of the year before an election, and then June 1st through the election in the year of the election. And that's basically it for campaign finance restrictions. This is not the other bills, including mine last year and previous years, that were broader campaign financing proposals. I am going to be introducing a bill probably this week, which I expect will be referred to this committee, which takes the campaign financing restrictions of this bill and applies them to other races in the state, including local races and statewide races, just as a matter of fairness and as a matter of achieving the reforms we want. These kind of reforms should apply equally to candidates around the state. The reason they aren't in this bill is just a limitation of the one subject rule. Next section is legal defense fund. All that says now is you can set up a legal defense fund. The under existing law, you aren't able to do that. Article 5, financial disclosure. The key here is just a slight variation from what we have in existing laws, but it's a very important one. Right now, when you file your conflict of interest forms in April, on those forms, all you have to do is put down any source of income that's over $100. And what this bill does is say, in cases where the source of income is someone interested or some company interested in legislation, then in those cases, you have to not only list who gave you money, but how much money they gave you and what you did for the money, what was the nature of the employment. And in cases, though, if you're a doctor and you've got hundreds of patients, in that case you wouldn't have to list out, you know, appendectomy, $250, you know, get a little absurd in a case like that. So there's a division made between sources of income that are interested in legislation and ones that aren't. And if they're interested in legislation, there's a slight change in the requirements. Article 6, Legislative Ethics Commission, it eliminates the existing House Committee and Senate Committees and Joint Committees on Ethics, which are now in existence, and replaces them with the Legislative Ethics Commission. The members are appointed from the public, and they're allowed to hire staff, and they're allowed to hold courses, voluntary education courses on ethics, that both lobbyists and legislators and staff would be invited to attend. And the final sections include a lot of relatively minor matters. One that's more major is the page 41. The reference there is to the salary and the compensation levels. The only amendment I'm bringing forward to the committee today is relates to this. The idea for the amendment came out of some effort that's going on from the judiciary branch to try to set up a commission to recommend salaries for judges, legislators, and commissioners. That bill will be introduced in the next week or so on behalf of the judicial branch. The idea is that, you know, whenever legislators or administration, anyone sets salaries, there's a, you know, a lot of concern about public officials setting their own salaries, and judges, it's equally a problem. The judges have to come forward and essentially lobby the legislature, and it all gets to be sort of unseemly. So the idea behind this bill is to put it in the body of a, put it into the hands of a public commission that makes recommendations, and the legislature doesn't veto those recommendations with so within so many days, and they become law. It seems to be a better system, a fairer system. So I've been convinced that that is the best way to go. But that would only affect the compensation in the forms of salary and long-term per diem, also known as interim per diem, or usually known as interim per diem. There's also the area of office accounts. In the area of office accounts, the bill's change to say the same. The existing $4,000 office account would be replaced with a $7,000 for a single representative, $9,000 for a two representative, and $13,000 for a four representative district. Four representative districts, is a seventh district only. And in each of those cases, it would be a voucher system, which is like the, or the same as the alternative B in the choices given this year to legislators on how to take your office account. You'd submit the bills. You ordered up stationary the bill. You have the bill delivered to the legislative affairs. They pay the bill for you and do the accounting. It's real important when we're talking about office accounts to always remember the fact that when the $4,000 office account was set, the size of our districts were much smaller in most cases, and the price of postage and printing was much lower. I think for just a general overview, that's it. But I'd be glad to entertain any questions. And if anyone wants me to go into more detail in any of the sections, I'd be glad to, but I don't want to unless you'd like me to.
Representative Finkstein, is there another ethics commission out there for other people in government, say administrative people, directors, and whatnot? How are they different? This only deals with legislature.
Yeah, there's what is called the Executive Ethics Act, and I've never worked for the administration, so I've never had a chance to look it over much. But it's actually maybe John could describe it better. It's a reasonably comprehensive effort at trying to establish, you know, standards for those in the executive branch, and it's totally administered by the executive branch, as our legislative ethics is administered by the legislative branch.
John, why don't you go ahead and make your presentation?
I think it's a fairly hodgepodge arrangement, unlike most states where you have an agency that either does ethics or does ethics and campaign finance together. The Executive Branch Ethics Act seems to have been modeled somewhat on 2460, the Legislative Ethics Act. It's somewhat more comprehensive, as it should be, I think, because people who work for the executive branch generally have full-time jobs, so you don't need to accommodate the needs of legislators to work outside of the legislature. But as far as how it works, opinions are rendered by the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office, I don't think, has any one person assigned to the job. It seems like they sort of do it on a catch-as-catch-can basis, although they do have the prior precedents to rely on. Complaints, and to my knowledge, there's only ever been one complaint brought under this, are handled by the Personnel Board, which is also responsible for personnel regulations, deciding whether positions should be classified in the exempt or partially exempt. So this is just one more function that has been given to them. So essentially that's the way it works, and as I said, it seems to me somewhat hodgepodge.
In the judicial branch, there's a very evolved system that I couldn't even start to explain on judicial ethics.
John, do you have something formal, or you want to give us another explanation other than what David has done on this bill, or
no?
You just want to answer questions?
Yeah.
All right. As the committee's understanding, the way I thought this is obviously complicated and sometimes somewhat controversial bill, merely because we tried to deal with it last year, and on the last day of the session, it had a lot of amendments to it. Anyways, we never got anywhere. My hope is that we take our time on it this month and have several hearings, try to get a lot of input, try to understand where our colleagues are on this, so that a bill that we do put out has an opportunity of passing, and hopefully try to get enough concerns addressed so that we don't end up with a huge floor fight, although I'm not sure if it's possible to reach that goal. I understand that the other body has a special committee on this, and they may be taking somewhat of a different tact or a different way. So I think what we need to do is just try to come out of here with the best bill we can with our collective minds. And let's throw it open to questions that you have right now or with David, and then spend as much time on it this morning as you want, and then we'll take it. Everybody take it back, look at it, mark on it, get our questions, and the next hearing we'll have comments from the public and more from you. So questions for David or John right now. Representative Grunberg.
I'll leap in if nobody else is going to get their toes wet. One of the central issues that I have, and I think that the legislature had, judging from the order that the amendments were offered on the floor last year, as I recall, was whether the legislative pay raise should be part of this bill. And that's, I think, a question we need to address. And if it's not, the question, and I'm going to leap to the second question, just to give the sponsor and the other members my thoughts. The second question is, if it's not, should that be addressed statutorily or by constitutional amendment? And we're going to have the bill that the Chief Justice is introducing, we may also have an opportunity to look at a constitutional amendment on that, but I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other. I was wondering if you'd care to, if Mr. Chairman was wondering if the sponsor care to comment on any of those.
Just make sure your mics are on when you do.
Thank you, Chairman. Just in terms of the policy of it, it's probably one matter I've talked to, more members of the public and legislators on than anything else, partly because of the profile of the issue. And I find pretty broad support for the idea of turning over that decision to a citizen's body. That seems to be the greatest support. There's also a general feeling that legislators are underpaid, and that part of a ethics bill that makes major reductions in compensation in areas, including elimination of long-term per diem, elimination of honorariums, the elimination of personal use of campaign accounts, the elimination of personal use of office allowances, and essentially higher standards for the reporting of outside income, that all of those contribute to a overall picture where a pay raise is totally appropriate. But it was a major discussion. It was probably one of the closest amendments on the floor. There were 26 or 27 votes even last year for the bill, and even with no time left. But the amendments on the pay raise were much closer to that. So I think the point of it all is that it's an area we haven't found much agreement around an exact level of new compensation, and the better solution may be what you mentioned yourself, the idea of something coming out of the judicial branch which allows a public body to make that decision.
Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely.
Yeah, my second question, and this may be very premature, but it's something that we, I'll withdraw. Thank you.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I'd ask Representative Bloomberg if you get a chance to take a look at the amendment that's enclosed here and offer your thoughts later on, because I'd be real interested in your view.
Representative Shoket.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Finkelstein does, in answer to Max's question, do you think that the pay raise could be lifted out of this bill and introduced separately?
No, not as a practical matter, it can certainly be lifted out of this bill. And I think, you know, that's essentially what I'm suggesting with my amendment, is to try to resolve the issue by allowing a separate citizens commission to make the recommendations and have those be the basis for legislative salaries. My hope, though, in the end, is that this bill from the executive branch will pass the legislature, go into law, in which case you won't need to make any reference to it whatsoever in the ethics bill. Because there's no certainty that bill will pass, I put in here my own amendment, which attempts to do the same thing. But I tend to think just from, you know, not, this isn't, you know, in my views, I'd be happy with increasing the pay just as a matter of law in this bill. But from talking to enough other legislators, I've become convinced that this other approach would be better.
Thank you.
Representative Finkstein, so people maybe that are understand on the audience and on the teleconference, your amendment takes out putting in any pay raise whatsoever and just forms this commission that would then set the pay raise.
Well, no, that's generally true, Mr. Chairman, but a lot of people aren't aware there's an existing body out there making these recommendations, and I even forget the name of the body myself. They're a very obscure governmental commission. They meet only every 2 years. They're the State Officers Compensation Commission set up in Section 3923 of the statutes. They're composed of 7 members. The qualifications of the members are named, and their recommendations are made to the legislature. The difference is that the legislature has to act on those recommendations in order for any change in compensation to occur. And even though they've always come in recommending that the system with interim per diem is not a good system, that this overall salary should be raised and the interim per diem, the discretionary per diem, eliminated. And the legislature always fails to act on it, probably because of the politically sensitive nature of compensation. So this approach would say that these become the law unless turned down by the legislature.
Obviously, you can tell how this is on people's minds, since this is the one topic that we pick up right off the bat to discuss. When there's obviously several things in the bill that are actually important and far-reaching.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to, you know, at some point. One thing I didn't say in opening remarks, which I meant to, was to go over some of the themes behind the changes from last year's bill to this year's bill. But since not everyone even recalls last year's bill, I didn't see it as important.
Well, Representative Finkelstein, I certainly recall the debates on the last day as being very interesting. Why don't you just briefly tell us some of the controversial stuff maybe that was removed out of there?
Sure.
Representative Grunberg?
Yeah, I would find that very helpful, or maybe, to give us a little written comparison, because even if some of us weren't here last year, there were policy decisions made then that there's been a change now by yourself in this draft, and that will help at least focus us on some of the areas where there are policy decisions that might be made.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Try to go over just some of the themes, and John could add to it. There were dozens of small and larger changes, so it's hard to mention them all. And the problem with last year is that there were just so many different versions of the bill. I mean, when I went to start on this legislation, I chose the bill that went to the House floor and all the amendments that passed, and some of the amendments that weren't offered for lack of time that probably would have passed, and using that, went from there on to other things. So it's very hard to pick the point you compare from. But
okay,
the first thing that I tried to do was take the areas where this bill got into too much detail and try to eliminate those and put some of those responsibilities onto this new Legislative Ethics Commission. A good example would be there was three or four pages about training sessions, and those sessions were going to be mandatory training sessions for lobbyists and legislators. And we turned that into like about one paragraph or two, which instead says the commission is authorized to set up, commission shall set up these training sessions, and you know there'll be voluntary participation by anyone who wants to come, because we were going and naming the actual subject matters in the bill. The same with legal defense funds. We spent a lot of time there on something the commission should just be authorized to do. Another area was the elimination of a lot of the rhetoric that was in the bill. I don't mean necessarily rhetoric in a bad sense. The bill had a mixture of standards that were enforceable standards with penalties for violations. Plus, there's a lot of parts of the bill that were just principles that should be followed. Thou shall do something, and they were mostly good principles, and most people in legislature agreed with them. The problem was it was very hard to read the bill and tell apart the standards that were enforceable and the ones that weren't. And it was very easy to take offense at some of the ones that were principles were not really enforceable, and they sounded so broad that you could hardly make a phone call to anyone without making some violation. So we tried to take all of those out, and I think we succeeded. There were places where we tried to look at things from a practical point of view, where a standard wasn't realistic or would lead to wholesale non-compliance. In those cases, we tried to find a more reasonable balance. A lot of unhappiness at the end still centered around the newsletter situation of the bill. There was certain standards in it for what the newsletter should include. We left those standards to the commission itself. And instead of being newsletters on top of your office account, they were to come out of your office account. So it isn't as... We expect it should reduce the cost of the fiscal note. I should mention the fiscal note while I bring this up, too. A lot of our changes were trying to reduce the cost of this bill. The fiscal note last year was quite high. We didn't make those changes. Hopefully there'll be more that try to reduce the cost. I'm not sure if this year's fiscal note reflected that. It's the same fiscal note as last year, so I'm not sure they had the time to actually look at the changes in the bill. But the example of the office account clearly was a reduction because the newsletters were to come out of your office account instead of being on top of it. That's generally it in terms of themes. There's many specific differences, but those are the themes.
Representative Shilkat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Was the salary last year the same as it is in this bill?
No. In the bill, as it went to the floor, it was $40,000 with no discretionary per diem. This bill is $36,000 with no discretionary per diem. There's no magic to the new figure. I just picked it in hopes of trying to find agreement, but it didn't advance the cause much, so.
Thanks. Thank you.
Well, Representative Bruckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Finkelstein, the section that keeps being referred to as a pay raise, after looking at the figures, actually, I believe, might be a decrease in overall compensation. Granted, the word salary is increased, with per diem being eliminated, it seems to me that the average income for legislators would go down. Is that
Well, it's a confusing thing. I actually spent some time this fall doing the calculations so I could answer that question, and at a later hearing, I'll have in front of me averages, compensation, that kind of thing. What you're saying certainly was my goal is to, rather than increase legislative salaries, to standardize legislative salaries so everyone makes the same. The system now is awful. You'll find people who work in the same district representing the same number of people who work similar hours during the interim, and one of the legislators will never turn in the per diem forms just because they don't believe in it or it's too much trouble or they have some other unhappiness with that system, and the other person will turn it in at a normal rate, So you've got, you know, $5,000 discrepancies in compensation in many cases. There are legislators who've never once turned in the form. And there's probably 10 of them, you know, who've been in and haven't turned the form. So it's certainly, I think we've got legislative pay not based on how much work you do on behalf of your constituents, but more how much you're willing to fill out the paperwork. I'm pretty good at paperwork, so I get mine in. So, but other people aren't, I guess.
If I could, John, Representative Bruckman through the chair. The bill only eliminates the interim per diem. It doesn't affect session per diem. And I think a couple of years ago you would be correct in saying that this would have been a major reduction, because under the law as it's written, you can claim $50 or $50 interim per diem if you spend 2 minutes talking to a constituent on the phone call. However, there was a perception that that was being abused, so the legislative council changed the rules so that you can now only claim interim per diem if you're either attending a committee hearing or putting in more than 4 hours a day. So I would say, in answer to your question, that I would think under the new rules of the legislative council, there are going to be very, very few, probably none, who make anything approaching $36,000. So I think this probably would be a fairly substantial pay increase for the people who fill out the paperwork as well as the people who don't fill out the paperwork. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I think that's right.
Just to quantify that, the average, over the recent years, the range in interim per diem has been from zero to about 10,000. 99% have fallen within that. And so the existing pay could be 22,000 to 31,000, disregarding the session per diem. And under the new one, it'd be, under this version, it'd be 36,000. So it would be an increase. So.
Thank you.
I happen to be one of those that has never submitted a sheet on that. And I just, especially during an election year, which, me being appointed, I only had that one, I thought I was real uncomfortable about saying, you know, getting my per diem those days, although I work 5 days a week. The other thing is, how do you divide it between doing something for someone? Is that campaign or is that legislative? And that also I had conflicts with, so.
Depends whether they vote for you or not.
And you never know that. So I certainly, and people have told me, by the way, you know, don't be a fool. Go ahead and claim those days. When you work, when you're in your office, you should claim it. And I certainly wrestled with that within my own mind, but never did, and don't know if I will again next year. Hell, I'll respond. I'm not claiming that I would do it forever. But I think it puts people in a bad situation. They shouldn't have that choice. Everybody should be treated equally, and however we do it, I hope it ends up that everybody is one way or the other. Representative Choquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that through the Legislative Council, some of this can be possibly done administratively. As an example, like increasing the allowance, the office allowance, from $4,000 to $6,000 or $7,000 a person. I understand that that could very well be a choice that that's under consideration now. In your mind, Representative Finkelstein, is there anything else in this bill that can be done administratively, especially an area of controversy?
Certainly, they're relatively small steps, and the reason, even though these avenues have been available, the reason they've mostly never occurred is perception. You know, I believe the legislative council should have found a way to increase the office allowance. Obviously, with the rising levels of postage and everything else, it just doesn't make sense. But they haven't done it, and we'll see if it happens now. I certainly would support it occurring. I think, you know, it's the kind of thing that we should hardly even have to deal with in legislation. But for 20 years or so, it hasn't been done, and I'm not, you know, holding my breath. Other areas that are like that include per diem, the rate of per diem. The rate of per diem can be changed based on, you know, what expectations of costs are. There's state rates, federal rates, all sorts of rates, so that can be raised. each legislator be given two trips home, personal trips home to their own district during a session. That can be accomplished administratively, but without it being a law, it's much harder to do.
Thank you.
I assume that that section, you look upon that as a minimum, that you're not trying to take the power of the speaker away, but you want to ensure that everybody gets a certain thing.
Exactly, Mr. Chairman. There's two points to it. One of them is to differentiate from committee business, you know, or other business. These are essentially personal trips. The fact that people a lot of times can't be away from their district that length of time, it serves the public to give them a chance to be back in the district. So it's completely apart from legislative business. This would be something that would be used at the legislator's own discretion. The second reason behind it is fair treatment of the minority. If you look at the other body in the past, since they have double the budget we do per members, they've always been able to send their members home at regular intervals during the session. And I suppose if you went at least in their body and put the majority-minority on a chart, you'd find certain people going home more than others. And I think there's a feeling that at a minimum level, it ought to be allowed to all members of the body, not based on majority-minority.
Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, Representative Finkelstein, I realize it's a minimum number, but it raises in my mind a question about districts that are far-flung and have many villages in them. Now, two trips home to such a district would probably not equate to two trips home to your district, for example, and how would you address that?
Oh, the money doesn't go into the legislator's pocket. It's just they don't get the cash for it. Most of them wouldn't go home then. They just get a TR. See, legislators are very poorly paid, so you know, you have to. No, it would just be a TR, and so that it's true that the more money you'd have to be paid for the legislators from rural Alaska, but you know, I think that's appropriate.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't concerned so much about the cost, but it may take, for example, three trips home for some legislator to see the same percentage of his constituents as it might take you one trip because of the compactness of the district versus the spread out.
Right, and realistically, no one is going home and seeing their district during the session. You know, no one flies and hits the communities one after another. I mean, it just isn't realistic. These are basically weekend trips where all you can do is go home, catch a constituent meeting, maybe catch a hearing on something. I'd like to achieve that goal you're talking about too, but that becomes more of an interim issue. And this doesn't address interim travel at all, so it doesn't get to that question. I think it's a good question.
If I could, Mr. Chair, Representative Moyer through the chair, what you're speaking about could still be addressed by the leadership through discretionary travel. I mean, I would assume that somebody with a district like Representative Finkelstein's that's nice and compact, the leadership would probably say, well, you've got your two trips, that's plenty of time, whereas somebody who's sprawling, the leadership might well say, well, I recognize that you have a need to make an extra trip or two. I mean, there's nothing in this bill that precludes it, as long as all that this bill would preclude, I think, if you're going home for purely personal reasons, if it's in a bill, it can be seen as salary, as additional legislative salary. If you're going home for purely personal reasons, I don't think that the leadership can authorize you to go home for a purely personal reason any more than they could send you to Hawaii for a purely personal reason. But as long as you're going home on business, there's nothing in this bill that restricts the number of times that you can go home if it's approved and if the money's available for it.
Does it say a minimum of two trips?
So it seems to say that this would be income, probably recorded as income by Ledge Affairs. If it's, I'm looking at it as IRS would say, this is not related to business. This is a benefit that you will probably have to pay taxes on, probably have to claim as income. That's a possibility?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to pretend to be a tax expert. I'm sort of floundering through my forms right now on this. And as everyone knows who's done the forms, and everyone will find out who's newly doing them, we get all these different kinds of compensation, and they're all real pain to figure out which category they go into, and the real secret to it all is to go to a tax consultant at least for 1 year and get them to do it and then follow it in future years. No matter what, it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference because there's going to be an equal deduction. So whether it's counted your income or not, it's going to come off just as well because you're going to have spent all that money. So it isn't. I don't think it's going to make any significant difference.
Mr. Goodwin?
I am not a tax expert either, but I would disagree with Representative Finkelstein's comment that if you have gone home for a purely personal reason, I think if you tie in a constituent meeting, perhaps you can write it off as a... But let's say you're going home because you own a business and you have to have an important business meeting and that's all you have time for on this trip. I don't see how it could not be treated as income then.
And the other portion of that whole discussion is that someone like me, I have three major towns and several villages. There's no way you can go to every one of them, and I don't think this is what Representative Finkelstein is trying to address in that. And someone else who may have 30 villages in their district, it's probably not for that. It's more of a issue of dealing with the minority in a fair way, because the majority over the years have gotten trips and the minority have not gotten trips.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow up on that. The just to address what the bill says, a trip paid for a subsection may be for personal, family, business, or constituent purpose. So it's just an election that any legislator would make. If you wanted to make it for a business or constituent purpose, the point John was making doesn't apply. So,
Representative Grunberg.
Three things. First of all, in Mr. Gagin's example, if you had your business as a legislator and then you also had a hardware store or something and you went home for a meeting with respect to the hardware store or something, you might not be able to write it off for your legislative business. You certainly could write it off for the other business. Second, there's a difference between this and the office allowance. The office allowance you get up front and you get it as a sum certain. This you wouldn't get unless and until you took the trip home. So it wouldn't be counted as income unless and until you availed yourself of those trips. And third, and this is something that my office has looked at, with respect to the office allowance, that's treated as income, then is written off as you buy stamps or whatever you do. The question is, for the purpose of determining your high 3 years for retirement, does it count as part of your base salary? And we've checked into that, and the answer apparently is no. But I think that's an issue because I'm a fan of the duck theory. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, you tend to think it's not a chicken.
Oops, Sam Baker.
Mr. Chairman, I can't help but respond. No, Mr. Chairman, I understand the dilemma that Representative Finkelstein has relative to travel, but it seems to me that, you know, if we're talking about ethics and the way that the majority versus the minority treat one another, that maybe the ethical thing to do is to deal with it amongst ourselves rather than trying to reduce it to law. And I don't know whether that's possible or not, but if we're really truly talking about ethical standards and ethical behavior, then maybe, and I know it's easy to have it in legislation, but from a public perception, the ethical way for us to deal with ourselves, to appropriately represent our constituents, seems to be treating the majority, the minority, no matter who's in control, in such a manner rather than trying to come into finite detail and make everyone happy by putting in a piece of legislation. As we get into the process, maybe we can just look at how we treat ourselves ethically and deal with it in that manner. It's going to become convoluted. There's no question about it. It's going to be very difficult to write legislation to deal with 30 villages versus a district where you can come downtown Juneau and it almost seems more appropriate if we study the issue of how we deal with ourselves rather than dealing
with it written into the law. Only on observation.
That's a very good point.
Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Finkelstein, is the two trips home reflected in the fiscal note?
Yes.
And my point is that it basically is an entitlement program, and therefore not subject to remove some discretion on the part of the legislature or the leadership to cut their budget, let's say, if we guarantee two trips home.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor this subject. This is, I don't have any particularly strong feeling. If the committee wants to arrange it some other way, that's fine with me. I tend to think this would turn out reasonably. I suspect you get two trips paid for by the state during a session. You're mixing the senators, certainly it's true. And this is an attempt to just put a little more even footing. It is in the fiscal note for, it looks like, $90,000. But they, let's see, they added to it per diem, which brings up a touchy subject. The idea of getting per diem for traveling to your home district, that's been a subject leadership's grappled with for years. Traveling to your home district during sessions, but apart from that, even just the travel itself is $57,600. And, if you found a way to take it out and reduce the fiscal note by that much, that's fine with me.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Giving back a little bit of historical reference to that is that we did spend a lot of time last year on the special committee on ethics on this particular discussion. And what it boiled down to was a fairness call for the minority, unlike the Senate, where sometimes you don't have a minority, or last year they had a minority of one, which increased to three this year, one big happy family. The minority does not get trips to the district to do even constituent work that the majority does. And this was a fairness issue which was brought out in the committee. And at that time, all six members of the committee agreed that it was a fairness issue. So you have to deal with it on the fairness issue. We speak from some, I personally have 5 years of a minority. And that's a reality. We do not get the trips back to the district that the majority does. That's not to say that the majority won't end up with four or five trips back, but at least there will be a fairness issue where each minority member, if they want to prevail themselves to it, can have at least two trips back to the district. And most of it, I would expect to say, will be constituent business, even for majority members. It will be constituent business. But that's how historically how we came to that two trips last year.
Good. I don't mean to get into the last few years' politics or anything. Could you give me a little example of how much would a minority person get? Would they normally get one trip or two trips or no trips? Or?
The last 3 years, I have received no trips from the majority.
Have you asked, Representative Miller, have you asked and been turned down?
I have not asked to be turned down because, although there have been members that have asked and were turned down, I will not divulge the names. In fact, some of those members are no longer in the legislature. They have retired last year. But it has been a case where that has happened, yes.
Representative Finkelstein.
Mr. Chairman, just to give you my experience on the subject, the rule that the leadership tends to follow in both the House and the Senate is to say that no personal travel is allowed, no travel just for a constituent meeting is allowed in general. This is just for the House here. But that travel for committee business especially for committee chairs is allowed. What that tends to do, though, is favor majority, because majority are by and large the committee chairs. So, are the committee chairs. So I think that, Representative Miller's point is how it works, that the system devised sounds fair on the surface of it, but in essence it limits travel to only a portion of the body during the session.
Representative Choquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To reiterate what Representative Miller said, it's very difficult to go home and not get involved in constituent work, first of all. And second of all, I would hope that this ethics bill shows, if we can't do it on our own, like Representative Baker suggests, I would hope that the final product out of this committee right here shows a key to fairness consistently. I know in the minority, a product of a lot of discussion, the inequalities between the two
caucuses, and that will surely be my goal. Thank you.
It brings up another point with me is, what about in the interim? I mean, Representative Finkelstein, if you don't have a constituent meeting, everybody that you represent is probably within 1 square mile of each other, or two or something. Where me, it takes me about 13 hours to drive from one side of my district to the other, and other places the only way I can get to is fly, you know. Of course, last year was an election year, and me being new, I paid for everything out of my account. But should there be a requirement there, or does the state or legislature have a responsibility to see that I'm able to get to my places, especially in non-election years, let's say? Or I wonder how, you know, I don't know, because I haven't been here before, so, and there's obviously people out in the bush that this is really a problem with. So maybe you might tell me how that works.
Sure, well, it gets back to the point that Representative Baker made, which is there gets to be a certain level which the internal financial dealings, especially use of leadership account, is impossible to legislate. You know, it's impossible to deal with all of the inequities of people's location, size of their district, other matters. People in the majority and minority of the House, both during interim, you know, the existing system operated by recent leaderships is just requiring a request for travel, whether it's out-of-state travel, whether it's in-state travel to a meeting, or whether it's within your district to attend, you know, meetings. And generally those, you know, the perception is, and, you know, Representative Miller can correct me if I'm wrong, the perception is that with at least recent leadership that has been reasonably fair. There hasn't been any wholesale exclusion of the minority in terms of interim travel. Now, in terms of rural travel or more distant districts, I don't particularly know the exact treatment, but I do know if you go and total up the travel costs off the listings by legislator, the rural ones get drastically and require drastically more travel expense and are given it because of the nature of their districts. There are some, and it tends to inflate it. When people look at the compensation reports, which the Legislative Affairs Agency issues, it's very unfairly biased and makes it look like some of the rural legislators are getting much, much higher income due to per diem and other factors than other legislators. But most of the time, it's just the higher cost of travel that makes it so high.
Other questions from the committee? All right, well, as I said earlier, my plans are that we reschedule this bill. At that time, we take some public input. I believe there are people from the Alaska Public Officers Commission that have been listening. We'll definitely have them scheduled, whoever else that we can get or wants to. And then either at that meeting, if we have time, we'll go on and try to go through the bill step by step and try to start working on it. Any comments or anybody on the committee?
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
See where we're at. Thank you, Mr. Gagin and Representative Finkelstein. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 6th at 8 o'clock in the morning. At that time, we will, staff, do we have an overview with that? Okay, so we'll have a Department of Administration, which I know some of you want to talk to, and we'll schedule, that'll be at 8 o'clock, House Bill 37. We'll have scheduled for our second hearing on that for 9 o'clock. Or 8:45, let's say, somewhere in there. Right?
What time are we meeting Wednesday?
8 o'clock. 8 o'clock all week.
What time do we start after the overview?
8:45, let's set that.
Sure.
Meeting adjourned, it is
9:55.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.